everyone, and welcome back to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Our mission is to provide stories and resources that will give you inspiration to explore all of the possibilities that your life can be. The possibilities are limitless, and guess what? So are you. It begins with believing. Believing in yourself, believing that the future is yours to write, believing that you can not only write your desired future, but that you have everything that you need to write it, edit it as needed, and fully and wonderfully live it. And you don't have to wait. You can start today. The pen truly is in your hand. I cannot wait to share this week's conversation with you. My guest today is someone that I first met way back in 2012. He was a guest on the show, several weeks ago, and we decided that we had more to talk about. He is a sales leader with 14 years experience focused on coaching and empowering sales reps and other leaders to do their very best work. He has developed a reputation for helping teams navigate challenging times and change. And we thought, now there's a topic that we could dive into. His name is Michael Gagnon. And I cannot wait for you to meet him. Michael, thank you for coming back and, you know, being a guest on the show again.
Thank you so much for having me back. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So we, after our conversation of a few weeks ago, we were madly linked on LinkedIn messaging each other about what else we could talk about because there was so much. And we kind of landed on the area of leading through change, disruption, and turmoil. And all that goes with that. But before we dive into that topic, why don't you tell us, you know, just remind the listeners a little bit about what you do and also what you just shared with me about this has become, I don't know, maybe an area of specialty of yours.
Sure. I did not ever set out in becoming agent of change with an organization. I've got about 15 years of sales experience, leadership experience, managing sales leaders, managing sales teams. And one of the things I've found in my career is that I've often been tapped as the change agent, the person, the fixer, to jump in and either start something from scratch, fix something that's broken, or basically take a team and lead it in a different direction. And so I've got a lot of experience with change. It's become a passion in watching teams excel and kind of navigate a bumpy or tricky environment. And there's a lot of rewards in watching people be able to get through that and crush their numbers. So I'm happy to talk about it today.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is really rewarding, isn't it?
It is, because you can instilling the foundations of accepting change and moving beyond it and being able to excel in an environment that's maybe not always the most open to you hitting your sales number.
Yeah.
If you have that skill, you can take that anywhere. So being able to lead people through that process and be intentional about it and have a developmental mindset and really walk them through, this is why we're doing this, this context, this is why the change is happening, this is what's in it for you, this is the vision I see at the other end. And being able to then execute on that, they can take those skills anywhere. You don't have to be sitting with them in the future whenever they face that. And I often get messages of folks that say, hey, I didn't really appreciate it at the time, but years have passed and I remember that conversation we had and I'm facing that situation now and it's really helping me and it's helping me with my peers or it's helping me now that I'm a manager, I'm able to execute it better. So
yeah,
there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah. And I think that's really at the heart of coaching too. When you coach someone, because coaching isn't just, it's not advice giving, right? You know, I mean, sometimes there is some teaching that goes along with it, but coaching is very different. And when you coach someone through things, the lessons keep coming back for them. Like, oh yeah, I've been here before. You know, I know how to apply it. Plus, when you're talking about change and turmoil and disruption, these are life skills, right? Because who among us have nothing going on that's ever tumultuous in our personal life? I mean, there's always something going on.
Right. And there are always other expectations that are often competing for our attention,
yes,
for our emotional well-being and our emotional status. But, you know, if you can get a handle on that and be able to coach yourself through it, it just makes you unstoppable.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love this. So when you think about it, you've been doing this for a long time. What do you think some of the major, I guess, challenges might be for leaders when they're going through, I don't know, let's say a pandemic or the great resignation or anything else? But what do you think some of those challenges are when it comes to leading?
A lot of those challenges can stem from the idea that these are the moments where you need the most development and coaching yourself as a leader. Oh, and yeah. Everyone in the organization is probably caught up in that change, and you're probably not getting the level of development, the toolkits, the help, the sidebar conversations to really walk you through that. And that's where the accountability piece still lands on you, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you're not getting that doesn't mean that you're not responsible for bringing your team through this change, bringing yourself through this change. And I would recommend always have an accountability partner. And this is not the person in your org who you vent to. That's the exact opposite. Your accountability partner is going to be the person who's going to, it's the tough love, it's the tough coach.
Oh, okay.
That's going to say, hey, you're really missing something here. You have some blind spots. And a lot of times I catch myself as well. We as leaders, we think the person we vent to, the person that we can communicate our frustrations to, that's going to be our accountability person. But no, it's a very different role. You need to find somebody who's going to be able to handle that for you.
Yeah, that is a really great point. Because both of those roles are really important. You need the person that's going to support you and you can vent to, but a lot of times it's hard for them to be like, okay, buddy, we need to take a serious look at this, right?
Yeah. That's not the person who can suddenly take that hat off and put a new hat on and just say, I listened to you complain and now we're going to do it in a different way.
Yeah.
Right. And the complaint, the venting, you do have to have that outlet, right? Especially through change, there are going to be a lot of frustrations and you need somebody. It is easier to talk about it to a coworker often instead of a spouse because then they know it. They have the terminology. They understand the organization better, but you can still find somebody who's going to hold you accountable. So a lot of times the accountability partner is best when it's somebody that's not at the organization because they can look at it through fresh eyes and they're not mired down by all of the politics and the history and all of that. So that's typically who I reach out to.
So for the venting, it is someone within the organization, but for the accountability outside, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's what works for me. I mean, sometimes the accountability can also be someone who maybe has a history or a past with that organization, but has moved on or is in a different department, different role, that's at least removed enough from it that they don't have their own frustrations.
Yeah.
And they can just really help you navigate it.
Yeah. Because I think too, if it's someone within the organization, if they're having the same challenges and frustrations, that can easily take a whole different tone to the conversation. I have been there before. Now, within that though, Michael, you said something about like the lack of support or training that sometimes managers experience. And I've seen that as well in the last 13 plus years. I can't even tell you how many times when I did the Catalyst training, which is, you know, helping managers become coaches for their teams, how many times managers came up to me and said, you know, this is the first time I've had any kind of training since I've become a manager. That's stunning to me. I mean,
and I think I agree with you. Sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead. I was just going to ask you what your experience was with that.
My experience is development and the training ends up becoming less and less as you promote through an organization. Mm-hmm. And so then the accountability rests on your shoulders as you promote and as you grow. And so I think no matter what, regardless mm-hmm. if you're at an organization that is super supportive of coaching and development and extra training, or they're not, you as a leader have to be responsible for your own development and seek out those sources. Yeah. So whether that's developing a relationship with someone who can hold you accountable, but that's also doing research on change management, doing research on pitfalls of change or things to look out for when XYZ happens in a company, right? And a lot of these things are not so unusual. And so a lot of these changes that we navigate in workday aren't so specific to that industry that someone else in the history of time in business has not encountered it.
Let's hope not, right?
Right. And we are in unprecedented times, so who knows?
That's right.
I might be incorrect.
But that's a great point.
But where to start is to ask yourself the question, am I even on board with this change to begin with?
Okay.
Because that'll tell you where you need to go from a development perspective.
Okay. So tell me more about that, because I could see where that would be important.
If you don't take a moment to step back and really understand, do I understand the context behind this decision? Am I on board? Do I agree with it? You know, as leaders, we're not often paid to agree with a decision. We're paid to execute on that decision. But if you don't at least give yourself the space to understand your thoughts on it, it's going to be very difficult for you to navigate that with your team. And that's often where leaders, they push that aside, and then they communicate to their teams, this is what the change is, and this is what we're doing. And then they're met with a wall of frustration or emotion, and they don't know how to navigate it. And sometimes they then echo that back on their team, and right. they snap, or we're just going to, you know. So I think it's helpful to understand, what is your mental space? What is your emotional state when it comes to how you feel about this? But at the end of the day, it really doesn't, it doesn't matter how you feel about it, because we do have to execute on that. But understanding where you fall. Because yeah. then you know, okay, the work on this is I need to get myself on board, and I need to really make sure that I can find all the benefits of this. I need to get excited about this before I then communicate it to my team.
Yeah. So as you're talking about that, I can completely see why you'd have to be on board. Because if you're not on board, everyone on your team, they're going to know it, right?
It's obvious. You can't hide it.
You can't hide that kind of stuff. But what happens if there is something and you're like, wow, I don't agree with it? How do you get on board with it? You know what I mean?
Right. Because you can very easily find yourself in a position where you are positioned between your team and the company. And yeah. you never want it to be like a us versus them, right? We're all the company. We're all aligned. At the end of the day, you want to ask yourself the question, do I trust that those who can make the decisions at the top, do I trust that they land in the right spot, that they get to the right place? It doesn't mean that they maybe are making the right decision now, but do I have trust in my organization, in the executive team, to make the right decision? And if you have that trust, you can really get yourself on board with whether I may not agree with this decision. It may not be one that I would have made if given the opportunity, but I have trust in the organization, and I know that we're going to get to the right place, and I'm on board, and we're going to work through it. Yeah. I'm not going to be a reason that this fails, right? The opposite, though, is if you get to the point where you realize, I don't really trust that they're going to get to the right place. I don't have that trust. Then now you're the obstacle. You're the hurdle in the change management process. Because no matter what, if you really don't feel like you can get there, then guess what? Your team isn't going to get there.
That's right.
So that's the hinge. You don't have to agree with the decision, but do I have total trust in the executive team that given all the information they have, that they're going to make the right choice.
Right. And ultimately get us into the right place.
Correct. With some, maybe there's some corrections. Maybe the first wave needs some adjustments, continuous improvement, right? Doesn't have to be, we're not talking perfection out the gate, but at the end of this process, they're going to make it right. And if you have that trust, it really does. It does help you as a leader get back on board.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of, I was at it was a conference back in 2006 on emotional intelligence. And I was so lucky. I got to hear, I don't know if I'm going to say his name right, but I think it's Jim Cozies. He was one of the co-authors of Leadership Challenge. And he said, if you don't trust the messenger, you don't trust the message. And that's what that sounds like to me. Is that on track?
It's absolutely on track, because you often, as the leader, have to be the messenger. And if you yourself don't trust the message, you're not someone to be trusted either.
No.
Right?
No. That would be a hard place to be in. Like, okay, I don't know if I agree with the decision, but I like that before we started recording, you made the distinction. You don't have to agree with it. You have to trust it. And that's...
There is a big difference there.
Yeah. That'd be tough.
But you as a leader, if you can... Do yourself the justice of making that distinction, it changes the dynamic completely about the change, because now it's not something that's being done to me. It's not change that's being inflicted on us. I'm a willing participant in the change because I do have trust.
Right. And as we know, the way that we perceive something goes a long way to how we feel about it. Right. But I totally see what you're saying there. Right. If we're just a victim of it versus I'm a willing participant, it does really change it a lot. Do you think that other leaders struggle with that distinction?
I do. And a lot of that is because someone hasn't walked them through that process yet. So I think as leaders, we all owe it to other leaders within the organization to find a buddy, find somebody that maybe this is new to, someone who has a little bit of a shell-shocked look in meetings or that seems to be a little, we all are in those meetings.
That's right.
A change is rolled out. You can see the wide eyes in someone who's like, oh, what?
Yeah.
I have no idea what this is. And you can pull them aside and just just do them the honor of what you learned the hard way.
Yeah.
And walk them through, hey, this is how I'm thinking about it. This is how I'm approaching it. Do you have ultimate trust? Do you really trust in that we're going to get to the right place? And walk them through that. And I think that there's a lot of power in for those of us who've experienced it. Because a lot of times there are leaders who have never led anywhere outside of the one organization that they've been in, right? You want to work for a company that promotes from within, but sometimes that creates so much isolation that you've never experienced anything outside of the walls of that.
That's right.
Of that company. And so I think for those of us with outside experience, I think we owe it to everybody to share.
Yeah. So this sounds like informal mentoring in a way.
Yeah.
Has that changed because of COVID with people working remotely? Is it harder?
I've read that. There's the belief, I know that executives are wanting to pull in folks back into the office because they worry about mentorships and what that means for folks who are greener in their careers. I think that coaching, development, mentorship, technology, I think it all finds a way. I don't think you have to be sitting in the same room to be able to figure that out. I think remote work and leading through a remote team, it just requires you to over-communicate. I find that I repeat myself more than I ever have. And I had to learn to not be frustrated by that. That whereas before I could turn around into a room and just say it once and I could see that everyone got it, I find that I have to then repeat myself multiple times. But it's the nature of what it's like to lead a remote team.
Right.
But I think yes, it is a challenge in that part. And I think organizations across the board could do a better job of having formal mentor programs or, really invest in any type of organizational change, have someone sit down and be like, okay, what tools are we going to give the managers? What's the communication plan? What's the change management plan? How do we bring our leadership team into this process so that they're not blindsided? And how do we use them to help communicate and facilitate this change?
Yeah,
because a lot of times the projects don't include the leadership. It's kind of everything's decided and then it runs and no thought was taken into how do you get the leaders on board?
Right.
And so the accountability piece we talked about is kind of how you can do that as a leader without it. But of course, organizations could all do much better about empowering and equipping people with the right mentors, the right skills, the right training development. And I think, you've built a career on that. So you absolutely know.
It also starts, I think, with the intention. Right. Like you were saying, like if you're in an in-person meeting and you'd see that person like with the deer in the headlights look, it's the, hey, how, or just knowing that they're a little newer, a little greener. And I think that can still be done remotely. I've seen plenty of people doing it. It just takes a little bit more intention behind our action, I think,
Absolutely.
Now, something you said before we started recording, I want to make sure we talked about was you said the better that you navigate change as the leader, the better your team does. Do you want to speak to that a little bit more?
Yes. So I've seen it over and over again if a leader does not necessarily, they're not giving enough space for their own feelings. They're not processing their feelings before they roll it out to the team. Again, sometimes there's not enough time
for
that.
Right.
Sometimes we don't get the benefit of that. But usually how a manager accepts the change is also reflective in how their team reflects the change. And so if you're noticing a lot of frustration and a lot of pushback, take a step back and say, okay, is there something I'm doing that's leading to this? Am I giving the impression that I'm not on board?
Yeah.
And sometimes you are so on board and your team still doesn't handle it well. I want to make sure that that's clear. So,
that's right.
But always start with you. That's where the accountability piece is. What am I doing that's contributing to this? Could I communicate this in a better, in a different way? Am I giving the wrong impression? Do I need to sit that back and kind of answer more questions, create a more safe space for them to ask questions, right? I just think that it just always start with you because that's how your team is going to handle it. We think we hide our emotions well. We think we can mask and none of us are really great poker players.
No.
And when stress is high and we're leading a remote team and we may not have had that experience and we don't feel super equipped to lead in a remote way anyway, then you add the stress and the change. We don't just suddenly get really good at turning it off. Even if we turn the camera off, your team is still going to figure it out.
That's right. Because you can pick up on that kind of stuff. There's been so much research in social and emotional intelligence, positive intelligence, where it's like you can feel what the other person is feeling. I mean, and we've all experienced that, right? If you think about a meeting, like in person, especially, and someone, and every, the mood's kind of good, and then someone walks in and they're in a bad mood and everything's terrible, you could, right? You can feel the mood shift because one person comes into the room, you know? I love that, Michael, when you said always start with you, because it does, you know? And I was thinking about, it was in 2010, I was working with, it's a huge company, and they had 5 offices spread out through the U.S., and they were going through a ton of changes, like layoffs. And it was painful, just painful, change after change after change. And one of the managers I worked with, her name was Carla, and she was in St. Louis. And the other 4 offices, when the layoffs would come down, they're like, hey, we're just going to power through. Well, okay, but that's hard when you just saw 5 of your coworkers leave. And it was a surprise. And Carla came up with, she's like, hey, that's not working for me. And if it doesn't work for me, it's not going to work for my team. And she said, we have to be on board with the changes because ultimately the direction is right. It's just painful. But she came up with this thing for her team. And the mantra was, when those kind of things happen, it was, today we mourn, tomorrow we move on. And so, wow. Isn't that wonderful?
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. Go Carla, I'm going to steal
that. I know. I've shared that with so many managers over the years because it was so powerful. Because like, if you just saw 3 of your coworkers have their job eliminated, of course you're feeling something. And it was just such a powerful thing. And it was so cool too, because I remember this because I worked with all 5 offices. Guess whose team consistently performed the best? Carla's.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because she gave them that space. But it started with, hey, if I'm hurting, they're hurting. And how do I help them through this? And I thought it was brilliant. I loved working with Carla for so many reasons. Okay.
And that's a skill that team can take anywhere.
Isn't it?
Right.
Though?
Anytime they face a level of adversity moving forward in life and work, they get to, because of her leadership, they can take a step back and now they've got a new set of skills that they can help navigate that and pass it on to other people.
That's right.
That's leadership. That's true leadership.
Yep.
And so good for her.
Yeah.
I love that.
And her team loved it. And I think it's a great illustration too of how so many of these things, it happens at work, but there's a life. It's a life skill. It's not just a work skill. So I wanted to, there's some, we talked before too about what is the fine line that a manager walks between holding their team accountable when maybe there are things going on either personally or professionally, you know, with your career, where there is, I don't know, chaos or challenge. But what, you know, and a lot of times managers say, you know, well, we need to leave it at the door, yet we all know it's really hard to do. So how do you walk that line?
Right. So the first thing to point out as a sales leader that as you navigate through change, missing your sales number doesn't make it better. I think that's the first thing.
The numbers
I think
are
we
not
all
forgiving.
Recognize. So as you're navigating whatever the change is, taking the foot off the gas and just giving your team a complete break or a complete pass, it doesn't serve anyone. No. Well, it doesn't serve you, it doesn't serve the company, it doesn't serve your team. And it makes the change more painful.
Yeah.
Because then people are linking performance with that change as a result of that change.
Yeah.
And you're automatically maybe giving a false perception that this is maybe not the right decision or it wasn't the right call. And I don't mean to say that sometimes change does have negative results. And
that's
and,
right.
You know, sales can't be effective because that absolutely can happen, does happen. But I think as leaders, it is our responsibility to make sure that we're still communicating what the expectations are. And so if mm-hmm. that change is going to have an effect on quota, you should also be communicating that in your forecast. You should be communicating that up. But in communication with your team, hey, this is our forecast. This it looks like we're going to miss. How do we bridge the gap?
Yeah.
How do we bring in more? What can we all be doing more, better, different to bridge that? So it's okay. So I don't want to give the impression that we just all say, oh, big change, but we're gonna forecast a huge number and we're just it's all going to be rosy and everybody's going to be happy and skip through the woods. It's not how that works.
It'd be nice, but it doesn't happen that
it
way.
It would absolutely be lovely, but no, it doesn't. But I think that, you know, just acknowledge that the pain is more, or the change is more painful if we miss our number and what are we all going to do? And the team has to all take ownership on that. You can communicate your mission, your vision, your values as a leader in adjustment to that change. So, hey, this change now has made me think that this is our mission now as a team. This is the vision I see for us through the short term. These are the steps we need to take in order to execute. And these are the values that we're all going to uphold, right? And being able to articulate that to your team. And I think any leader should always have that. But by having that spelled out, you can adjust to any change that you navigate throughout the year. Like, okay, so this happened. Let's revisit our mission. As a team, do we still feel like that's on the table? Do we still feel like this is attainable? Do we still feel like we have the right skills in order to execute on this?
Right.
And by asking your team that and getting their feedback, and kind of opening the door that they're, again, they're willing participants in the change too. We're all paid volunteers, right? This isn't being done to us. We are all willing participants. And so just being able to kind of navigate that with your team by talking through, does this change our job structure? Does this change how we execute our sales process? Does this change how we are going to approach our selling motion? Does this change our go-to-market plan? And a lot of times, if it doesn't, well, then great. Okay, so this change, whether we like it or not, it doesn't have any bearing or change on how we're going to execute as a team. So let's go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Let's push along. I think the hardest, the accountability, though, is not so much on a team level. It really is as a leader helping someone navigate change when an employee is really struggling outside of work. I think those are ones. I think you've mentioned as well that you've had a lot of people pull you aside and ask for advice.
And
I think that's the one, right? Because you want to manage the whole person. We can't all compartmentalize and say, well, okay, within the walls of work or when the work hours start, we expect people to cut that part of themselves out.
No.
But it, you know, at the end of the day, there still is a job that needs to be done. And there still are expectations that need to be met. So there is a balance there. And I've talked with folks about it. It's been communicated to me in a way of a three-legged stool. So if you think of each leg of the stool is a pillar or a foundation someone's life is built on, it's something that's important to them. And for every person, it's different. It could be work, friends, family, faith. And when something is off in that person's life, the tendency is the stool has is to fall over. That's why you want to reinforce everything else. Make the other leg stronger, make the other legs longer to compensate. And so when someone is on your team and they're struggling through some sort of change outside of their lives, you're not doing them any well-being, any service if you give them a full pass and they miss their sales number. Because then everything feels awful. They're not making money and they're having to navigate this tricky issue outside of work. And so you want a situation where someone can bring their whole selves to work and you can acknowledge that they're having a hard time, but you can coach them through to hit their number so that they're hitting their commissions, they're hitting their bonuses, there's a success. And then they can then leave that at the door and focus on whatever they need to outside of work. But everything feels terrible if you're just kind of giving them a pass or not holding them accountable for what they need to do at work.
And then we really are in that downward spiral, right? Where now everything is feeding on each other and it's going down. At least if we stabilize at work, at least it's a little bit of stabilization, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes we also, because here's the thing, I think people, it would be nice and neat if work and life were separate.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
But I don't think that's, especially in sales and for sales leadership, I have yet to find a situation where that was true. I mean,
absolutely.
You've been there. You're the one in the trenches.
Right. Because you're and especially in a remote world where when you're working out of your house, the lines are even more blurred.
That's right.
In terms of what's personal and professional. And, you know, so I think that you really have to get that message across of let's work on this together on how you can hit your goals. How nice would that feel that you didn't have to worry about work on top of this, right? See, there's compassion in that. And I think sometimes leaders mistake it as, oh, I have to be the ogre to tell them that you got to hit your number. I have to be uncaring, unloving in order to do that. But there is a compassionate way that you can approach this that is very focused on the well-being of that person and still include hitting their sales number.
Right. What I also love about that too, though, is, you know, you're putting a light on it. You're not hiding from it. You're not pretending that it doesn't exist because it does exist. I mean, I was thinking about it this way, you know, someone like, let's say they have an aging parent that lives with them. If that aging parent is going through something, they're going to feel it. They're probably going to be a little worried about it. Like, oh my gosh, is my dad okay at home while I'm here? You know, is he going to get his meals or whatever that might be? So having the compassion for it, that also builds a lot of loyalty. You know, this was at a credit union a couple of years ago, and I was coaching a manager and she was coaching one of her reps, and her performance had been a little bit off, the rep's performance. And so the manager was very compassionate. She's like, can you tell me what's going on? You know? And so they got to talking. And as it turned out, the rep had a son who was, I think, 8 years old. He was autistic and he was switching schools because it was a new school year. And this meant that he was going to be home 15 minutes earlier and he'd be alone for those 15 minutes. Do you think that it's as a parent, is that going to be on your mind? Of course it is. Of course it is. You know, and the manager, she's like, oh my goodness, I'd be so worried. And she's like, well, let's brainstorm. What are some solutions where maybe you could have some flexibility? Let's figure out how to make sure he's not alone for those 15 minutes. If you were the rep, how much loyalty would you have to that manager? This is a person who cared enough to help you solve something really important to you. I almost cried.
And cared enough to ask. Right.
And cared enough to ask. That's a great point. Because she could have just skipped over it. Yeah. Why'd you pick up on the caring piece?
Because I think that there is a stereotype of the sales leader and the sales rep as sort of, it's the commission breath. It's just the numbers focus. It's the uncaring piece. And, you know, a lot of the things that make a very successful account executive, makes a very successful salesperson, those are not the traits that always translate to effective leadership. Mm-hmm. Your salespeople are usually not the most patient, and leadership requires a lot of patience.
A lot.
And so, you know, I think that it's, to me, you know, I think that when a leader is compassionate and empathetic, but then also successful, they've been able to find, that's the key, that they've cared enough to ask and also really figure that out.
Yeah.
So as you were saying that, it struck me that was someone who really found that balance. And part of it is there's the caring piece, but then it's also, you know, that person could have just said, well, we're going to do this. This is the solution, and you can deal with, or your job is to be here within these hours, and I need you to be on the phone, or I need you to be accessible, so figure it out.
Yeah.
And which is probably the typical answer.
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating too there when you said that caring enough to ask, it triggered a whole bunch of thoughts. I am a very curious person, and it comes from, I do care very deeply. And I used to really worry that people would misconstrue that as she's just nosy. And you know what I mean? And so sometimes I would hesitate to ask. And it's fascinating how many times when managers have, you know, faced a situation similar to that, they're like, I don't want to pry. What if they don't want to tell me? And I'm like, if they don't want to tell you, they're saying, I don't want to tell you. It's none of your business, you know, but when we ask those questions, that's how we're demonstrating that we care. You know, if we don't ask the questions, a lot of times people don't, we might care, but they don't know that we care. Do you know what I mean?
Right. But if you were to keep that, if you were going to keep fighting against your instincts, how authentic do you think your leadership would be?
Oh, not very, not very.
And I think we all do that. Mm-hmm. I think we all have this idea of what a leader is supposed to be like, or a sales leader. And it's not always framed around the best. It's not the most positive view. And we think we're supposed to fit within that mold. And if you're empathetic, if you're compassionate, if you care about people, if you care about a job well done, but you also care about the lives outside of work of your team, that they don't have to be mutually exclusive. You know,
no,
you don't have to fight that instinct. There's a way to be able to, because sometimes people think it's a weakness, or they'll use it against you. Or if I pry too much into my, if I know too much about what my team is experiencing outside of work, then I will only just not hold them accountable. I don't want to know anything, because I want to be able to still be very
rigid.
Yeah. And I'm not advocating for you to be best friends or to know everything about your team, but I do think that if you ignore it, it doesn't go away. And if you can't manage to it, then it's just going to linger, and it's going to affect their numbers one way or another. And so why not open the door and even just care enough to ask?
Yeah.
And if they decide to share with you, then great. The expectations of the job, the sales quota, the requirements of that doesn't change, but how you can align with that person can change. Okay. Yeah. Now we know this information. What can be done better?
Yeah.
How do we brainstorm how we do this? I love that.
Yep. And when you're talking about the persona or the image that I think a lot of people have of sales leaders and sales managers, it's so not what was in my experience, you know, because I mean, you know, I've worked with sales managers and sales leaders for the last 13 plus years, and I've personally coached thousands of them. And I would say, with the exception of maybe five, they all deeply, deeply cared. Man, they just gave everything they had to their team, and they cared deeply. I mean, so five out of, you know, 1,000 plus, that's not a bad ratio. So maybe the secret's out.
It's not a bad ratio, but somewhere along the way, I imagine all of them got the impression that they weren't supposed to care as much as they do.
Probably so.
Or to care is a weakness.
And some of them would even say, now don't tell anybody, but like it's a secret that we have. Can you close the door before we have this conversation? It's like, it's okay if you care. I'm a nice person. Don't let the cat out of the bag though. Okay. So I have to ask you this final thing, Michael, because we talked about this before the recording and I had it in my mind, I'm like, oh, I want to end with this. Talk to me about the buffalo.
So this is not my, I did not make this up. I do not want to take any credit for this. I've heard many speakers reference it, but it's a helpful tool when, and it's a good visual, it's a good story to understand how to navigate change. And it's what I like to talk to. It's like a story I like to give to my team so that they understand. And especially I like to give it right before if there's going to be a big announcement, or if we know there's change coming, right?
So if you start talking about a buffalo, people are like, oh no,
run.
Buckle up.
Right. And so if you think about the plains and you think of like a flat prairies and you can see a long distance, you could see far. So if you knew that there was danger coming, you'd be able to tell pretty early on. And cattle along the way learned to look out for storms. And when they would see a storm on the horizon, they would turn around and run in the opposite direction. What ended up happening is they could never outrun the storm. Mm-hmm. As a herd, they were never fast enough to be able to outrun it. So they prolonged their pain because they essentially ran underneath the storm for a longer time. Buffalo, on the other hand, took an entirely different approach. So they evolved to see the storm and run directly towards it. So, and it wasn't one buffalo. It was the entire herd would run together and face the storm. And what that did was it shortened the pain. Because they could run underneath it and the storm moves faster. So when all else fails, when navigating change, be the buffalo. It's not one buffalo. It's the entire herd turning around and deciding we're going to hit this head on. So whether the change is scary, whether it's just change for change's sake, whatever it is, if you accept the mantra of be the buffalo, you already as a leader are kind of saying, okay, I'm going to get everybody to run towards this. But it wasn't one buffalo that's running through.
Right.
It's the entire herd. And so if you can get your team all along the lines of that mantra, then it's a chance to kind of get everyone to understand, like, okay, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. It might be painful, but we're heading in the right direction. We're not going to avoid it. We're not going to put blinders on and just pretend it's going to go away or it all is over, or I'm going to wait for the change to be done elsewhere and then I'll figure it out. There's ownership and agency, and we're all doing this together. And I think there's a really powerful message in that.
Yeah, I love that. And as you were talking there, another question, of course, came up, which is how hard is it to convince the rest of the team, the rest of the buffalo, the rest of the herd to run towards the storm?
I think it depends on the change, but I think that just as you take a step back and realize whether you're trusting those above you to make the right decisions, they're analyzing you in the same way.
Yeah.
And so I think if you're human and you're not trying to gloss over it, you're not trying to, it's not all spin, it's not all positive, right? If you at least acknowledge, this is what I'm asking you to do, this is what's required of us, this is what's happening, this is why it's going to be in our best interest down the road. And that this is what we need to do in order to make that happen. And it's probably going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be bumpy. It's going to, you know, there might be some emotions wrapped around this, but that's okay because we're all a herd and we're going to be the buffalo and we're going to run towards it.
Yeah.
And by doing that, it's going to be less painful than if we fight it or some of us drag our feet or we decide that we're going to not go along with it. That's when it gets more painful.
Yeah. What stands out to me is like that example. And when you're talking about, you know, the vision, mission, and values of your team is how much it seems like you go back to the team and you just have real and honest conversations and get their input and get everybody on the same page. Is that a fair representation?
It is. And that's scary to do.
Oh yeah. You don't know what they're going to say.
And the instinct is to do the exact opposite.
Yeah.
Send it in an email
That's right.
Communicate it in a way that that's the least painful for you, but be the buffalo, right? You can't, if you're not going to hit it head on and address it with your team as an adult and give them the benefit of being able to communicate to you their concerns and the ability to voice frustrations and for you to kind of help usher that through, no one's running towards that storm.
No.
The storm is on you and you're stuck in it.
That's right. So that's your first opportunity to run toward, to be the buffalo, is in the way you communicate with them. I love that.
Hit it head on.
Yeah. Because they want that. I think a lot of times we try to come up with a way to communicate that's unassailable, right? If I put enough facts in here, enough data, there's no way they can argue with it. That doesn't move anybody, man. You know, I love that. So that's a perfect way to end. So if someone is curious about, you know, contacting you or learning more, what's the best way for them to reach you?
The best way to reach me is via LinkedIn. My name is Michael Gagnon, and you can find me on LinkedIn. I think the profile link is on the show notes. And be happy to keep this conversation going.
Perfect. Perfect. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Any day I get to talk to you is a great day. So thank you so much for carving out this time. I love talking about this stuff. I imagine I'm going to send you several more ideas.
Good.
In LinkedIn, we can go on, but I love talking about this stuff, but it is as excited as I am about it. I recognize that this is a challenge. So that would be the challenge I'd give out to any leader listening is be the buffalo. How are you going to take ownership of this? How are you going to make change easier throughout your organization? Because I think once you wrap your head around that, it gets so much better.
Yeah. I love that. It's a perfect way to end. Right. And likewise, anytime we talk, it's like, I know I'm going to feel better at the end. I'm going to be all motivated. So thank you for carving out the time. And I look forward to a future interview as well.
Well, thank you so much. Have a great one.
Okay. I always love talking with Michael, and I hope that you had some great takeaways as well. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, as a leader, always start with you. Michael talked about the need to make sure that you have some way to hold yourself accountable. He talked about having an accountability buddy from outside the organization, which I thought was a great idea, as well as looking for red flags that your team might be struggling with change. And if you notice any red flags, it's worth it to pause and ask yourself, is there something that I'm doing that's getting in the way? Insight number two, you have to be on board. If you aren't on board, your team won't be on board. And I loved how Michael talked about that you don't have to agree with every decision, but you do have to trust that the decision makers are making decisions that will ultimately lead you to the right place. And I think that's a fabulous distinction. And finally, insight number three, be the buffalo. You cannot outrun the storm, but you can shorten its duration by running towards it. And as the leader, you have to be the model of behavior that you want to see in your team. If you run from the storm, they'll run from the storm. And I loved how he talked about even just the way, you know, that you communicate with your team. Are you sitting down and having a conversation or are you running from it by hoping that, you know, an email will suffice? So anyway, loved that, be the buffalo. That wraps up today's episode. Thanks for tuning in and for listening. If you're a sales leader or professional, be sure to share this episode with others as this is always a hot topic and I hope to provide some value with it. So I hope that you have a fabulous week and remember to thrive no matter what.